In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
Welcome, one and all, to Green Lantern's Light, episode 15, covering the Green Lantern saga, not from the beginning, but from the early 80s. I am J. David Weider, one third of your hosting trifecta, and to my metaphorical right is Mr. Michael Bradley.
Hello.
And to my metaphorical left is Jeffrey Taylor.
You can call me Guy Gardner.
To my left is Guy Gardner. And this time around, we're actually covering Green Lantern Corps issues 210 through 212, plus an edition of a brand new book that has facilitated the need to bring on a very special guest. You know him from Superman in the Bronze Age, Mr. Charlie Niemeyer.
Hi, which metaphorical side am I on?
You're right on. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's a metaphorical lap dance.
We only have three chairs. Sorry.
I want a Green Lantern ring for Christmas.
Oh, that just made it all dirty.
But, Charlie,
I said, Green Lantern ring, not
Okay.
Oh, we're starting to show off like that, are we?
Yes, we are.
It's going to happen tonight, folks.
Charlie, like the rest of us, Charlie, you are known more as a Superman guy, having hosted Superman in the Bronze Age for almost 3 years now.
Uh-huh.
What is your connection to Green Lantern?
I first got into Green Lantern right when Kyle Rayner took over and basically followed everything from there on up to just after Rebirth. And I occasionally would go back and get some of the older stuff, but I didn't get too much because it seemed like every time I picked up an issue, it was like to be continued in the next five issues. And it's like I didn't want to spend money on five issues worth of books, since with Hal being gone at the time, a lot of the Hal issues were kind of sparse. So mostly it's just been Kyle and a little bit of Guy Gardner because of when he shows up. But he wasn't a Green Lantern then. He was that alien human hybrid thing that looked like an Indian.
Oh, yeah, warrior.
Yeah, there you go. And so, yeah, that's most of my Green Lantern stuff. And then, of course, you know, the TV, the Justice League and all that stuff.
Well, that's almost a perfect segue to why you're here, which is to introduce to the show a new title, Justice League, the 80s version, known as the Wahaha League or the Giffen de Mateus League.
And it's good stuff.
It is good stuff. I'm actually excited to get to that.
Me too.
But it's funny that we're all four of us are Superman people. We really should have this show on the Superman Podcast Network, even though it's a Green Lantern show when it comes down to it. But also, Charlie and I do have another connection. We both work on the online comic book Slipstream.
Yes.
Which is available at clockworkcomics.co.uk. I write it. Billy Hogan is the artist on that. And Charlie Niemeyer does our colors.
Yes, and Billy's also a Superman podcaster. So
yes.
It's like a whole full circle here. It all comes back to Superman, who is not any issue in this episode.
Exactly. And I do want to also mention that I came into Green Lantern at around the same time. Right when Kyle Rayner was becoming Green Lantern. I think the first issue I picked up was 48.
Okay. Yeah, I think my first issue was 51.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, 48 was the first appearance of Kyle Rayner, even though you didn't know who he was or that he would be important.
Yeah, and it was really confusing that first issue because it's like he's just starting, but it's like, wait a minute, where's Green Lantern? At that point, the only Green Lantern I knew was Hal because of Super Friends.
Yeah, he went off on a murder spree, you know.
Well, yeah, I found out later.
Normal Spoilers. Space stuff.
It was an imaginary story.
Yeah.
But before we get to murdering sprees, we do have books to cover this time around.
Nice segue.
And looks nice like Jeff. Yep. Jeffrey's got our first one this time around.
Yes, I do. The first one we're going to be looking at is Green Lantern Corps number 210, which sold for a whopping 75 cents. The title was See Red. The cover date was March 1987 with a release date December 18th, 1986. Wow, I'm just realizing that was a time I wasn't reading comics, so I can't make the connection, but my parents were right in the middle of getting a divorce and my grandmother had just died.
Ooh.
Wow. Merry so, Christmas. Okay, uplifting.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Good timing.
Yeah, exactly. So, getting into the story, Guy Gardner and Kilowog are going at it fighting in the air over Soviet Russia. If you remember, Kilowog likes the group mentality of what communism is supposed to offer, and Guy is there to attack him for being a quote-unquote commie. While they fight, Russian command and Reagan in the U.S. war room both consider dropping their red alerts to orange, thinking that that might stop things from getting out of hand, but neither decides to do it. Guy and Kilowog continue to fight and appear to be about evenly matched until the Rocket Reds show up and attack Guy. Kilowog chastises them, saying that it's a fight between just the two of them. But Guy comes back up while they're looking the other way and binds them all in constructs and then smashes them into the ground so hard that they go several feet into the ground. One of the Rocket Reds threatens Guy by saying that if he doesn't let up, they'll kill the other two lanterns that they're holding. Kilowog doesn't care for the sound of this and gets pissed that the Soviet Union is holding John Stewart and Cat Matui. Kilowog turns on the Rocket Reds and demands answers. Meanwhile, at the Green Lantern Citadel, Chip and Aresia play tennis while Salak, Hal, and Carrie Limbo watch. The phone rings, and it's President Reagan, who tells Hal about Guy attacking the Soviet Union. So they're off, leaving Carrie behind. Russian spies in California see that Green Lanterns are taking off, but can't actually tell if it's them or nuclear missiles. So they inform command in Russia. Soon, at the Kranatov Institute, I think I'm saying that right, in Moscow, Guy breaks his way in to save John and Katma. After putting down some soldiers, he finds them being held unconscious. They had planned to keep them sedated and kill them once their rings ran out of their 24-hour charge and they were no longer protected. Guy is pissed and throws the scientists around. Just after that, Kilowog arrives at the Kremlin and demands to see Gorbachev and find out why his friends were held captive. Gorby freaks out and exclaims that this is an American attack. He picks up the phone and orders a missile launch. The other Green Lanterns, Hal, Aresia, Salak, and Chip, arrive over Soviet airspace just in time to see hundreds of missiles taking off. There are a lot of them, but they start taking them down as quickly as they can. When Kilowog's axe threatened Gorbachev, Joseph of the Rocket Reds demands that he leave him alone. Even though they were comrades, he has to honor Russia first. So they fight brutally, throwing each other through walls and stuff. This goes on for several pages until Kilowog finally just puts him down. So he does. Guy arrives with the still unconscious John and Katma while the rest of the Green Lanterns show up too, and they've just stopped World War III by taking down all the missiles. Hal chastises Guy for starting the whole thing, but Kilowog is more upset that he had to hurt Joseph. Who would like to go first?
Charlie?
Huh?
Yeah,
okay.
Let the guest go first.
Oh, Lord. Okay. First off, the cover. I really like the cover. Mm-hmm. it's very much kind of a picture of Guy's head and what he's thinking is going to be the response to him stopping Kilowog, I think, with the American flag and the Boy Scouts and the little Jewish boy and all the people praising him. And everything that happens in the issue is exactly the opposite, so it's kind of ironic. On page one, I like how the letter R for red is the sickle and hammer. It's kind of cool. Let's see, page 3 and 4. Again, I like the irony of how Guy thinks that he's saving the day when he's actually starting World War III. Page 5, Green Lanterns, they take a beating and keep on ticking. Because I don't know how they're still conscious after some of these hits, but okay. Page 9, all I could say was like, WTF, Guy was right for once. Because he actually knew something about this that Kilowog didn't know. And
well, he guessed correctly.
Oh, okay. Well, fine.
Page 10. Even a stopwatch is right twice a day.
This is true. Page 10. That phone that they're using is huge. That it's the same size to Hal as it is to Chip. If you look at it. It looks right in Chip's hand, but then you give it to Hal and it's the same hugeness. I don't know. Staten's not very good with phones. Page 13.
Chip's just got big hands.
Well, you know what they say.
Big hands.
Yeah.
Big gloves.
Exactly. On page 13, Guy looks a little weird on panel 2. Really toothy. I don't know. It just looks a little funny. Reminds me of some of those Jeanette Kahn pictures that they used to do when she first
see. Wow.
Page also.
He's just still really like thin from his coma days.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Also on 13, I think it's interesting that the Soviet guys mislaid. So I think it's interesting that the Soviets mislead Kilowog and threaten to kill John and Katma. So when Kilowog fights back, it's suddenly an American attack. It's like, no. But then again, I don't know if maybe it's just it's what happens when an American is writing the Soviets, I guess. I don't know.
It's not a Soviet thing. It's a government thing. Governments get stuff wrong. Yeah.
All the time.
Yep.
Page 14. I really like the art here, but damn, that's a lot of missiles.
I had a similar note. It's over the top.
I don't know how you could store that many missiles anywhere. That's like a whole world's worth. But they look pretty.
It does occur to me that they basically launched all of their missiles, except this sort of implies that they're all kept in the same place.
Yeah, they're just kept at one base.
It's a good thing none of them are bumping into each other.
Exactly. And it's very fortunate also that the Green Lanterns just happened to be flying over that spot when they're launched. So
there's a lot of that in this month's issue. So
yeah, everything's it's a lot of coincidences. But beyond that, I just thought it was a fun issue. It was kind of weird because I hadn't really read the previous couple issues. So I'm really glad that you sent me the last episode so that I could catch up. Because for some reason, and I thought it was kind of weird that this was an 80s comic that didn't have any kind of recap of the last few issues to bring you up to speed in case this was your first issue. So that was kind of weird. I mean, they kind of mention it in some of the dialogue, but it still isn't the usual flashback stuff that they normally do.
I did actually notice them when I was doing my recap. It occurred to me that maybe I should recap some of the information, but you get it within the story instead.
Yeah, it's a little different, and I kind of picked up by the end. I kind of had enough picked up that I was like, okay, I kind of understand what's going on, but it definitely would have helped if I had bothered to go back and read the issues. So, but no, once I got the episode, I was like, oh, okay, this all makes sense now. And as for the art, Joe Staten is not one of my favorites. I'm sorry. But I have to say that this issue and the next couple we're covering this episode are actually some of the best art I've seen from him. So I was pretty happy with the art.
He's gotten a lot better since he came on the title. He's gotten a lot more comfortable with the characters.
Yeah, well, see, also, most of the stuff I've seen is from his later stuff where he gets more cartoony.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a little different for me. I actually kind of like this. I mean, it's not perfect or anything, but it's pretty good. So well, that's all I have on it.
You want to go next, David?
Yeah, I'll go next. But going back to the cover, I was so drawn into the patriotic Norman Rockwell thing Then I completely forgot that Guy was starting an international incident. I was just like, oh, that's cool. Oh, wait. pages 1 and 2, we have the beginning of a very nasty throwdown between Kilowog and Guy Gardner. But looking at the background, did they intend to make the sky yellow? Because that's an ironic choice.
It's also kind of gross.
What?
It's also kind of gross.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if your sky has jaundice where you live, but it's just of all the colors they could have chosen, yellow. Yeah. Okay.
Well, really, it's the green pop, though. So.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point, is that it makes the green pop.
Maybe. Page 3. I like the mentality of our Green Lantern is bigger. Yeah. Well, your Green Lantern also punches women in the face. Think it through.
And dirty turkeys.
And dirty turkeys. Right in their turkey necks. Page 8. If Guy knew that the air would run out within that little hole he crammed the Kilowog and Rocket right into, did he intend to let them out before they suffocated? Hmm. Did he have a long-term – well, he may not have even had a long-term maybe. Plan.
I would hope so, but it's Guy Gardner versus commies. And
well, there is that.
Yeah.
On page 9, do you think that the Rocket Red, who let slip that they have John and Katma, was kind of the dork of that squad? It's like, oh, come on, Barney, not again. Those are national secrets.
He'll get kicked out.
Yeah. Well – doesn't matter much longer now, does it?
No.
Page 10, it's going to take me a long time to forget Salak in casual wear. He may be grumpy, but not when his lands in order comes in.
Where do you order polo shirts or, I guess, casual dress shirts with four sleeves?
AOL.
Okay.
Well, there is that.
Well, they just order normal clothes, and then Aresia, you know, is the seamstress because she's the only woman on the team. So between her secretarial duties, she's the team seamstress.
Can't it be construct clothing? Well, can't they just change their clothes at will, pretty much?
True. Fair enough.
Yeah.
On page 12, I spent a long time trying to figure out exactly what this doctor is saying, because he says something like Sukin Sin.
I think it's Russian.
For what? Sukin Sin.
That I don't know.
Don't shoot.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm gonna run with that. It's just don't shoot.
Oh.
Or throw me the idol, I throw you the whip.
Thank you, Urban Dictionary. It's Russian for son of a prostitute.
Wow.
So it's son of a bitch, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Oh,
I'm going to have to remember smooth. That one. Sukinsen.
For what it's worth, though, they misspelled it, at least according to Urban Dictionary. So, FYI. Carry on.
You learn something new every day.
He's from the sticks of Russia. They're not big on grammar.
Okay.
Yeah, it's South Russia.
Okay. South nice. Of Russia.
Yeah. It's the Missouri of Russia.
Oh.
Moving on to page 13.
Yeah.
At any moment in the 80s, the wind could have shifted directions and the missiles could have been flying. But yeah, this was a little knee jerk, you know? I mean, I thought so at first, and I think it through. I'm like, oh, wait, Kilowog has one of the most powerful weapons in the galaxy strapped to his finger. Okay, fire the missiles, sure. Page 15, one of the details I really, really liked was, in dealing with the missiles, they're stopping them, but they're also hiding that they had been launched. So, I mean, it doesn't escalate any further than it needs to. But doesn't that mean that Hal is, by some technical standards, committing treason? Hal, I guess, Hal would be the only American, but...
Well, John's an American, too.
But John's not in this.
Well, but aren't they kind of a not denominational, but... not tied to any one country.
True.
It really depends on how you look at it. Like, where, I mean, the Americans could definitely see it as Hal being treasonous because he is from America. But I think that his real conviction is for the Corps anyway.
Okay.
Plus the fact that they're trying to stop a World War III altogether, I think probably would let him off the hook a little.
It's the same thing as when people were saying that Julian Assange was committing treason by releasing all this U.S. information. And we're like, hello, he's from Australia.
Fair enough. It's just something to think about. I mean, that's one of those gray areas where it could go anyway. Finally, to wrap up on pages 16 to 22, while I liked the fight between Kilowog and Rocket Red, it's because of the friendship rather than the action that we do receive here. And then you get punched in the face in the end when Kilowog's crouched over Joseph crying, because he just had to basically kill his best friend. And his friend was fighting on nothing more than orders. He had no actual animosity. That killed me at the end of the issue. But that, you know, most of the issue was fisticuffs, we're stopping World War III, and then we're going to basically punch you where it hurts.
Yeah, it was a really good issue.
Yeah. That's all my page-by-page notes so far.
All right, well, I'm up then. I like this cover a lot, too. It's fun and funny. It would have been clever to have painted it like an old James Montgomery Flagg painting or something, but that's the kind of idea they're going for. It's just not painted. It's drawn. I really don't have a whole lot of page-by-page notes about this issue. It's a lot of punching and fighting, but none of it seemed gratuitous or fighting for the sake of fighting. It was action-heavy and kept the story going. Just bottom line, I thought this was a really fun and well-written issue, and like David said, the gut punch at the end came at just the right moment. And with one tiny exception that I'll talk about in a minute, was really well executed. But as for page by page, page one, we have a great opening splash. Pages 2 to 8, I love these scenes of Guy and Kilowog just wailing on each other and generating different constructs. Like I said, it was just a very fun read. Page 3, I'm not sure who he's supposed to be, but this guy talking to Reagan describes Guy as naturally belligerent and fanatic about personal liberty. Oh, so he's Ron Paul. Kidding. I'm glad Charlie got that.
Yeah.
Page 10.
I got it. I was just muted.
Oh, okay. Page 10, panel 3, like David said, seeing Salak and loungewear, really, really weird. But in panel 3, no. Okay, panel 2 is the one with Salak. Anyway, panel 3, Chip answers the phone and then turns to Hal and says, "It's your president," which I thought was a nice, subtle detail in the scripting, especially after Chip's face-off with Reagan from last episode. Page 14.
In fact, I can hear his tone of voice. It's your president.
Yeah. Page 14, like we said, that's a lot of missiles. I mean, I realize comics are rife with extremes and exaggerations, but that's a ridiculous amount of missiles.
Just a little bit.
Pages 18 to 21, I like that the fight between Kilowog and Rocket Red was mostly silent. Jeffrey described it as brutal, and that's a very good description of the fight. I don't think dialogue would have helped it at all. Even in comics where dialogue is as much a part of the art form as anything else. And page 22, like I said, a real gut punch moment here when you find out that Rocket Red died at Kilowog's hand. Unfortunately, it's kind of ruined by the minor fact that they plug the next episode with the phrase "party time."
Yeah,
you have this nice somber moment, and then party time. But
so sad, and then yay.
But other than that, a really good issue, and I was anxious to get to the next one when I finished it.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
Quick question: at one point, Kilowog keeps saying "shick you." Now, I kind of, from the tone, I'm kind of guessing what that means. But does he use that often, or
he doesn't?
No, that's a newer one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Poozer, he's used Poozer a few times, but it's not become a huge part of his character yet.
Okay. Yeah, Poozer I like. I've never heard "shick you."
It could be Russian again. Maybe he's learning from being there.
There you go.
See what you did there.
The thing for me about this issue is that it really is a very good wrapping up of a longer story. We had two issues leading up to it, and basically all the pieces were in place by the end of the last issue. That this one, we have not one, but two really big and very dynamic fights, because the opening fight is really well done. It's well choreographed. And then you get that really poignant fight between Kilowog and Rocket Red toward the end. I also really like this cover. I'll just leave that where it is. I also really like the opening splash page. I think it's really dynamic, this fight. I know that some people have issues with the sky, but I don't really mind it. Page two, I love that Kilowog digs communism because of the group deal that it's supposed to be. Kind of like the old Green Lantern Corps that he wanted to be a part of so much. Page three, Sergeyevich says about Kilowog, "But ours is bigger." That's the Cold War. That's what it is. But ours is bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pretty much.
Page four, both sides staying at red alert is bad. In fact, things might be okay if just one side did back down. If one side did, then the other side would. It's kind of part of the idea of the Cold War. Page eight, this was a really good move on Guy's part, knocking the Rocket Reds into basically creating a hole in the ground and then plugging it with a cork construct. Except he probably wouldn't have had to go in with them and then put the cork on it. Probably just could have put it in there. Page nine, and of course Kilowog had to find out about John and Katma and then turn on Russia. That was a given. One of the more predictable parts of the story. Page 10, Lantern's on holiday. It's amusing to see Picklehead in a colored shirt with sunglasses, but the sunglasses are what did it for me. Page 11, I got a big kick out of the fact that the Russians refer to Reagan as the actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Page 14, that's a lot of missiles. And then one of the last notes that I have is on page 15. What the hell, Salak? The mushroom clouds are too beautiful to allow? Dude, we're talking about a lot of lives here. But by the end, it's a really good issue. The fighting was good. And I do have to wonder, is the Soviet Union out of missiles at this point?
That's a good point.
And that was the type of strike. Missiles run out of you.
Yes.
That didn't make any sense. Never mind.
Nice try, though.
Yeah.
All right, so that's
Soviet,
that's it
for Russia. Green Lantern reconstructs you.
You even put the accent in. Very nice.
I have moments, yeah.
All right, well, there's no letters page in this issue, so we're going to move on to our continued look at the miniseries Legends. This time we're looking at issue number 5, which was released around December 26th, so about a week after this Green Lantern issue.
Boxing Day!
What's that?
Boxing Day.
Yep. The day after,
day after Christmas.
Oh,
Boxing
okay.
Day.
Okay.
It's an international thing. It's on calendars.
All right. Well, the title
It's recognized in real countries.
Oh.
Once again, the credits are John Ostrander, Len Wein, John Byrne, and Carl Kessel. And the title of this particular story is Let Slip the Dogs of War. Despite his guilt over the death of Macro Man, Billy Batson resumes his role as Captain Marvel to halt the angry mob. Around the country, other heroes disregard the ban on superheroes to continue their roles as protectors. G. Gordon Godfrey leads a protest on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and the crowd plans to lynch Captain Boomerang, who has been captured. However, Dr. Fate interrupts the demonstration, bringing with him the gathered heroes of Batman, Superman, Flash, Black Canary, Blue Beetle, Changeling, Captain Marvel, and our very own Guy Gardner. Back on Apocalypse, the Phantom Stranger taunts Darkseid, saying his plan has failed. But Darkseid says the stage is set. The gathered heroes must now either fight the very people they have sworn to protect, or allow themselves to be destroyed by them. And either way, Darkseid wins.
Darkseid always wins. That's how Darkseid rolls.
I want to throw out there that I actually forgot to read the credits when we were going through this. However, they will be the exact same credits in the next issue. So when we get to that, it's the same people. I do apologize.
For the Green Lantern issue.
Yep.
Yes. We haven't been doing notes on the Legends issue, but one thing I noticed when reading through this issue 5 is that Legends is the first company-wide crossover following the creation of the merged Earth and Crisis. And I don't know if it was intentional, but the collected heroes that appear here are Green Lantern, Flash, and Changeling, all Earth 1 characters, Dr. Fate, and Black Canary, who are both Earth 2 characters, Blue Beetle, who was an Earth 4 character, Captain Marvel, who was an Earth S character, and then Superman and Batman, who were both Earth 1 and Earth 2 characters. So it's just interesting that they kind of span the gamut of the various companies and characters that made up the pre-crisis DC universe.
Great way to showcase that it's all one place now.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but so if nobody has anything else, we're going to take a quick break and then come back, and David will tell us about Green Lantern Core issue 211.
Sweet.
Wait, did I have that synopsis? I'm kidding. I'm fine. I'm kidding.
You heard silence. It was like, uh-oh.
Make it up.
Yeah. With that issue, I actually could have easily. I thought about not writing it down. I'm like, no, I'll put it in there to keep my...
I probably could have done the same thing, especially since it's just like, okay, well, there's a fight, and then here's a little bit of story, and then there's another fight.
Everybody gets drunk.
Twenty-seven years ago, the planet Krypton was destroyed. An infant boy and his cousin survived and have found a refuge here on Earth. But they were not alone. Another scion of the House of El has arrived. Why is he here? What is his purpose? And how will Kal-El and Kara Zor-El respond when faced with hell on Earth?
The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a podcast that covers the current adventures of Superman and his family of characters. Join John Wilson, J. David Weider, and guest host Charlie Niemeyer as they review and discuss this latest crossover adventure. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is available on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
So leaving the skies of Soviet Russia and coming back, we are looking at Green Lantern Corps issue 211, the April 19th.
Did you say that promo we just played is run by communists?
Well, I thought that was no.
I'm just saying.
Well, no, I...
Wow.
Okay, somebody else do the segue then. Somebody else do the segue.
Carry on.
Okay. This is the April 1987 issue, which went on sale January 15th of the same year. And the title is, I kid you not, Pink Elephants.
Look out, look out, pink elephants on parade. Here they come, hippity-hoppity, they're here. And there are pink elephants everywhere. Look out, look out, they're walking around the bed. On their head, clippity-coppity, parade. In braid, pink elephants on parade.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
I can stand the sight of worms and look at microscopic germs, but Technicolor pachyderms is really too much for me.
Written by Steve Englehart, Joe Staton did the pencils. Mark Farmer was on inks. Bob Lappin was on letters. And Anthony Tolan was the colorist. My grammar's awesome. They also apparently did Green Lantern 210. It is New Year's Eve, and Guy Gardner shows up at the Green Lantern Corps Citadel to start partying with his fellow ringslingers. But they're all on duty, and despite Guy's prodding, the Corps stands devout to have a quiet night at home. Meanwhile, at a gathering, Carrie Limbo suddenly drops her drink and rushes off. Back at the Citadel, Guy uses his ring to create an alcoholic drink that mixes with water and is completely untraceable and will affect the aliens. Unaware, every Green Lantern apparently decides to drink water and gets drunk, leading Aresia and Hal to act as normal, which is making out feverishly. Salak gets a little aggressive and decides he can beat any of his fellow Green Lanterns, but passes out instead. And Kilowog gets very, very depressed and hits himself repeatedly over the death of Joseph last issue, while Catman and John decide to get married.
And what does Chip do?
Chip really doesn't do much. He starts singing.
Yeah.
Chip sings.
Hi ho, hi ho.
He's the guy doing drunk karaoke at the bar.
Yes.
And literally, he's on a bar. So that's really cool.
He's singing chipmunk songs.
Guy is somewhat enjoying his handiwork when Carrie shows up and then injects him with the alcohol before drinking some of it herself. After some awkward drunken admissions that Carrie
she
loves
pulled
Guy.
A Dexter on him.
Yes. But after some drunken admissions that Carrie loves Guy and has always loved Guy, the whole core gathers together like the end of Mary Tyler Moore in one big slobbery hugging mess. And realizing that Gardner is behind their inebriation, the core starts to gang up on him, but come under attack by pink creatures who look like winged elephants. And while the fight gets intense for a moment, Hal realizes that these are projections from the unconscious Salak, and once he is awakened, the danger passes. And Guy is run off from the Citadel and is off to join the Justice League as another union is formed in space, a partnership between Hector Hammond and Star Sapphire, a partnership that threatens to crush the Green Lantern Corps. No, that's really all that happened in the issue. I kid you not.
It was pretty light on story.
Yeah.
I'll go first on this one. I'm pretty lukewarm on the cover. It made sense after I read the issue, but it wouldn't have made me pick up the issue beforehand because it's just not an appealing cover. Which is odd to say because it's well rendered. I mean, Hal looks good and the monsters look freakish, but it's off-putting as well. There's just nothing that really grabs my focus and makes me want to read the issue. But as for the issue itself, I kind of would have liked to have seen more follow-up to the stuff from Kilowog last issue. But at the same time, I'm not sure what I would have wanted to see from it because I don't want a whole issue of Kilowog moping around since that doesn't fit with his character. And really, him being drunk and hitting himself in the head over and over is a clever way to deal with that without making a big production out of it. Page one. Is it weird that Hal is in his civvies here while everyone else is in their union suits?
Yes.
A little bit.
I didn't really think of it.
Page three. Why is Carrie Limbo hanging out with Elvira?
Is that John Constantine?
I have a note on that. It looks like John Constantine. Or it could actually be Sting.
I had a note on that too.
I think it's a group of magic-oriented people.
Okay.
And Sting.
Ah, that could be the case.
Because I didn't know who anyone else was in the background, but that looked like John Constantine or Sting. And I definitely noticed Elvira.
It's John Constantine because he doesn't look like Keanu Reeves.
Whoa! Right.
Whoa!
Guns. Lots of guns.
pages 4 to 14. It's a stretch that Guy would have ready access to anything that would make all of these characters from different planets drunk with such speed, but I can forgive it because it's a comic book. And I think these pages were pretty well written. They were funny without crossing into slapstick or cliche. And plus, drunk Salak made me laugh. And as I said, I loved the Kilowog portion, which was a clever follow-up to the stuff from the last few issues. It was just great. Englehart did a good job of interpreting each character's personality through the alcohol. I mean, they didn't all get drunk and start acting like a stereotypical drunk. You know, they each had their own kind of, I don't want to say take on it, but
everyone's
a different kind. They're all various stereotypes.
Well, yeah, but anyway. Page 16. It occurred to me, I think this is the first time that we've seen Hal, John, and Guy in action working together in the same scene. And that made me happy. Unfortunately, I think this is the last time we're going to see Guy in the main Green Lantern book for quite a while. But even though they're not quite getting along here. I liked seeing them working side by side, finally. Page 20, I said it a couple episodes ago, a ring that responds to your subconscious desires is a really, really bad thing. And I can't believe it never came up before. And page 22, this last page didn't get me as excited as I'm sure it was meant to. I've been enjoying the direction of the book and don't really feel they need to bring Carol back at this point, but we'll see. It could be good. That's all I had. Jeffrey?
Okay.
Sure, I'll go next. The cover, I just looked at it and said, WTF?
Yeah.
Although I do kind of dig it in a weird way. It's not something that I would have necessarily picked up off the shelf, but since I have to read it for the podcast, I was taking a look at it and saying,
this book.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I have to read it. Page 4, well then, I'm guessing Aresia's race doesn't have much of a tolerance for alcohol. But then it turns out that none of them do. It only takes one sip, and I'm wondering if this is like PSA level drunk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Page 7, I refuse to believe that Kilowog is that much of a lightweight. And it started to occur to me at this point, are we sure that Guy didn't just lace the punch with MDMA instead? Ecstasy.
Oh, okay.
He just roofied the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah. Page 8, when John proposes to Katma, I have an idea how that's going to turn out, but we'll get there.
It involves a refrigerator.
Kind of. How bad would it be if they had to go save the day tonight? By page 12, I was kind of getting sick of all the drunk talk stuff, especially because the dialogue, they're written specifically to sound as though they're drunk as you read it, which makes it a little bit more difficult to read. I tend to read pretty quickly, and I have to really slow down to understand what they're saying. So that starts to get annoying too. Page 15, yes, Gardner was way out of line doing this. I'm guessing at this point that he's going to get kicked out of the Citadel and he'll have to join some other team. Page 16, I thought the pink elephants were just silly. But then by the time we got to page 19, okay, if it's Solok seeing pink elephants, that's a little bit funny. Because all of their drunken states are stereotypes of one kind or another. Like Chip starts singing. A couple of them just start, doing it by the fire. That kind of thing. Kilowog just punches himself in the head. So page 21, yeah, right. Guy's going to lead the Justice League as if. Although it is funny how that does turn out, but we'll get to that in a little bit. And then for the final one, page 22, I saw this and I was totally looking forward to the next issue, and I'm glad that I didn't have to wait because I do like Star Sapphire and Hector Hammond, so it'll be interesting seeing them team up. But of course, it's a question of how do they take on the core, but we'll get to that next issue.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, I guess I'll go next since Dave's the one that went through the issue. I should probably pull up my notes, though. Again, I like the cover a little bit. I mean, yeah, it's not – it kind of – with the elephants like that, it says to me it's a Green Lantern in space issue, even though I know it's not. But it just kind of screams that this is in space or something because they're like alien creatures. And I'm not a real fan of Green Lantern in space stories, so which is kind of weird.
Not to interrupt you, but one weird thing about it is the background is just a solid purple.
Yeah.
If it looked like they were in space, maybe that would help it a little bit.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know. But I also noticed there's a distinct lack of any other Green Lanterns. And I would think that they would have some of the others in there. Maybe not Solok, since that would kind of – I don't know if that would give it away, but it would have been nice to have maybe Guy and John in there too. Just, since in the issue there's four Green Lanterns fighting these things and not just Hal. But on page 1 through 2, with all due respect to Sean Ingle, Guy Gardner's a real jerk. And he may get better down the road, but – in this issue,
no, he doesn't.
Well, okay. But in this issue, he's a real douche. On panel 3, I pointed out about Elvira and who I thought looked kind of like John Constantine. And I'm wondering if that blonde girl is supposed to be someone, since she's kind of prominent, but I wouldn't know because I don't read those books. Page 4, I'm not sure I'm really comfortable with the idea of Guy getting the Green Lantern Corps drunk, since all of them are wearing these rings that, like Michael was saying, kind of taps into their subconscious, and I can't imagine that that's a good idea to have on drunk people. With page 7, I like how everyone is.
If I can just, sorry for 1 second, I wasn't sure. Is that something that Salak can just like normally do? Because these aren't green constructs; they are pink elephants. So, is it something that he's doing in his sleep with the ring, or is it something that's like part of his race?
That's a good point.
Because I don't know enough about Salak to say for sure.
I would say since he's unconscious. And they're pink. I would say it's something his race can do, because they all look a little bit like him.
That was my guess.
And they're talking, so a construct couldn't do that, unless it was Salak talking through the construct, I guess.
Constructs can talk. Can't they send an energy version of themselves to Oa and talk with the Guardians and stuff?
Yeah, that's what I said. They could be talking through the construct.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Huh. But yeah. Let's see, where was I? Page 7. Okay, everyone in the Corps is a different kind of drunk, which we all mentioned. And after the last few issues, it kind of makes sense that Kilowog would literally be beating himself up over what happened, even though really he's not at fault. But he would still, especially since he had to kill his friend. Or Joseph, well, is his friend. Pretty 8. Okay, page 8. It's a pretty monumental scene. And for a second there, I thought they were actually going to take it back, since they're, you know, doing the proposal and stuff while they're drunk, like they wouldn't remember it. And also on panel 4, the way the coloring's done, I know in my head that that's just supposed to be Katma's hair and John's face, but it looks like something really weird's going on with John's eye in that panel. Just because of the page 8, when they're Katma and John is in front of the fire and everything's different shades of like orange or red, the way they've got Katma's hair falling and the way they've got John's profile or the side of his face, it looks like he's got something really weird going on with his eye.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like he's wearing glasses just right there. But I mean, I know that that's just her hair, but when you first glance at it, it looks a little funky. Page 9, I'm not sure, because I've never had this done, but is injecting water into a person's body the same as drinking water? And I wouldn't think injecting water would be all that safe.
Especially, I'm pretty sure it's also pretty unnecessary too.
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that would kill him.
Yeah, it's not really safe. So, I don't know. Maybe the only reason he's still alive is because of his ring keeping them alive.
It's like those medical students who won a Darwin Award for mainlining caffeine.
Ugh. That doesn't seem smart either.
No. Aren't you glad they didn't become doctors?
Yeah, thank God. page 10. I am not surprised at all that Guy's a mean drunk. He's just not nice.
Mean sober, so.
Well, I know, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's not surprising that he's a mean drunk. Page 12. Does this mean that, based on what, what's her name said? I can't think of her name now. Carrie, that Guy is partially brain dead?
He's got brain damage. As Bill Cosby would say, he's got the brain damage.
That's some jello. Okay, and then page 14, finally, and I don't get to see this often enough, is when the other guys finally have enough of Guy Gardner's crap and they actually kind of go up against him. Doesn't work too well because everyone's drunk, but they're finally trying to take him on because he's pissed them off enough. And then page 19, I was in the same boat as Hal, because I didn't really understand what was going on, but it kind of made him look dumb when John and Arissa figured things out before Hal did, because they're like, oh, I understand. Yeah, doesn't this sound like someone we know? And Hal's like, huh? What do you mean? And then it took a little more talking before he finally got it. So, and then on page 21, it's too bad that when they kicked Guy out, they couldn't take his ring too, because, you know, I don't know that it's that safe to have a loose cannon like Guy flying around with a ring, but since the Guardians picked him, I guess they have to let him keep it or something. I don't know.
It's been a recurring problem ever since they tried to kill Hal Jordan.
Yeah. It's like, eh, it's all right. It'll get better. It's like, whatever. And actually, after an issue like this and the one before it, it's kind of amazing that Guy Gardner gets to stay alive and they killed a Robin. I don't know. Maybe if they had the 900 number here, we wouldn't have Guy. That's kind of sad to see. So I'm going to move on. Page 22. The whole thing, I mean, yeah, it's usually kind of out of nowhere anyway, but it's kind of out of nowhere that these guys just show up with a giant organ. So they have an organ in the background. Don't be dirty. But yeah.
Well, I was going to say it sounds a little pornographic.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got her, you got Hector Hammond's head, and you've got a giant space organ. I don't know.
Hector Hammond's head and a giant organ. Next to a half-naked woman.
There you go. And that's all I got.
You need a shovel to dig yourself out of that hole there, Charlie?
Yeah.
Okay. Probably, but I'm going to stop talking now.
How about I take over while... and just bring this issue to a close. I have nothing to say on this cover. It does nothing for me. But I appreciate Guy Gardner, because Guy points out the spelling error I make at least during one set of notes for every episode. That's corpse versus core. One letter can make a big difference.
Yep.
On page 2, actually for once I'm with Guy, because it wouldn't hurt for the Green Lanterns to kind of chill out and have a bit of fun after everything that just happened. You know, international Indian incidents and communists, the things that just kind of got dropped in this issue. There were still things going on when we ended last issue. You know, not everything had dialed down.
Yeah, that's true.
And we just kind of jumped to them hanging out at the Kenner Green Lantern Citadel playset. So
now on sale.
Yeah, on sale at
your local Kmart.
Yeah. Page 3. Okay, here's the deal. The alcohol thing doesn't quite fly for me, because how do we know that some of the alien members actually even drink water or eat food, at least the way we do? What if the water on our planet was toxic and it just happens that everybody drinks the water that night? Everybody's thirsty?
With Earth microbes, it probably would kill aliens anyway.
Mm-hmm. Like its signs?
Yeah. I like, though, that their glasses all have a Green Lantern symbol on them.
Yeah, I actually have that note on page 4. Even the glasses at the Citadel are monogrammed with the Green Lantern symbol. And, there's something hot about when Arisia starts drooling, apparently, because Hal just can't resist. I mean, look at page 4. It's dribbling.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, they're all over each other. And then again on page 5, kind of continuing that thought, once again, Hal and Arisia are making out, and another Green Lantern is standing there watching. This seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah. And that's really creepy.
Yes. Yes, very much.
At least it's a different Green Lantern this time, and not Kilowog again.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Kilowog, though, I was having fun with this issue. I was laughing, and on page 7, Kilowog happened. Punching himself in the head. I'm like, wow, this went down a few notches. You're a kind of a party killer. And page 8, John and Katma decide to get engaged, which is kind of the beginning of a marriage that will last for many, many years, and nothing bad will happen to either party.
Oh,
man. Yeah, never.
Carrie Limbo is also a buzzkill. She brings the party down to a sobbing mess. And then... on page 13, I've seen this happen because everybody's crying. But yet, at the same time, as much as I joke about it, it's actually this release of emotion that I think is a very good thing, which ties back to my original note where, you know, it could be good to let off steam because they've had an intense couple of months just coming to Earth, not being accepted, the whole communism thing. It was, and I mean, not even accounting for like Chip losing half of his, well, losing everything. So yeah, this while this issue degraded into fighting literal pink elephants, I kind of phased out until the last page. So I guess most of my notes after that good emotional release was, well, that happened. And then we did get a great tease on the last page, which leads us into issue 212. But
has Chip always worn a bow tie as part of his costume? Because yeah. That's hilarious.
I think so.
Well, since coming to Earth. Before they came to Earth, they had, you know, standard Green Lantern outfits.
Okay.
Once it got personalized, yeah, he rocks a bow tie. Bow ties are cool. Yeah,
they all got personalized in I think 201, the first one that was supposed to be the Green Lantern Corps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like it.
But that's all I had for the issue was, you know, a couple of good emotional moments, but the second half just kind of lost me.
The Written to the Core letter column returns this issue. Not much of note, really, other than lots of love for issue number 208 and the Kilowog Russian Communist storyline, which we all liked quite a bit, too. So that brings us to the final issue of Legends, which is issue number 6. It's a 30-page story titled Finale. Same credits as last time with the addition of Dennis Janke, who inked about 10 pages. On the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, several superheroes make a defiant stand against G. Gordon Godfrey and his followers. Godfrey turns loose the Warhounds, then calls in parademons to battle the heroes. While the battle rages, the Martian Manhunter stops an assassination attempt on President Reagan, convincing him to rescind the order outlawing superheroes. Eventually, the mob surrounds the heroes. Before the two parties engage, a group of children led by Robin and Lisa Sutton speak up in defense of the heroes. Godfrey slaps Lisa to silence her, which turns a crowd against him. With his hold broken, he tries to use the Helmet of Naboo, which the parademons had stolen earlier in the issue, but the helmet backfires, neutralizing Godfrey. The mob disperses, and most of the remaining heroes decide to reform the Justice League of America. And that's the end of that series. I really enjoyed reading through Legends again, more than I thought I would. It was very entertaining. But
I came close to reading all 6 issues last night, but decided to go to bed instead.
Yeah, I'd probably choose sleep instead of...
Yeah.
Especially right now. Anyway, we're going to take another break and then come back for Green Lantern Corps issue 212.
212. Multipass.
The Bronze Age of comics. An era largely ignored as far as Superman goes, and an era that some consider to still be part of the Silver Age. Sure, a lot of people know about the Kryptonite Nevermore storyline, where all the kryptonite on Earth is turned to iron and Clark Kent goes from a newspaper reporter to a TV reporter. Then there are the Alan Moore stories, for the man who has everything and whatever happens to the man of tomorrow. But in an era that lasted 15 years, surely there's more to the Bronze Age than that, right? Well, my name is Charlie Niemeyer, and every other week, I shine the spotlight on this long-overlooked era of Superman in the Bronze Age. Featuring such stories as The Return of Jonathan Kent, 2 meetings with The Amazing Spider-Man, the Phantom Zone miniseries, The Enlarging of Krypton, and more. Plus, J. David Weider also joins in to take a look at Superboy's Bronze Age adventures. So join in the fun at www.supermanandthebronzeage.com and www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So the final Green Lantern Corps issue we have this time is issue 212, which has a May 1987 cover date and was released around February 19th, 1987, or possibly 1986, as I have in my notes. $0.75, cover is by Joe Staton and Bruce Patterson, and the title is Fun Couples, and it's an Engelhart Staton Farmer Lappin Tallinn Helfer celebration. It's time for a grand celebration, the wedding of John Stewart and Kat Matui. The newly-wedded couple exits the church to cheers and accolades of their fellow Green Lanterns, John's mom, and some guy who probably would have been portrayed by Bo Rucker in a movie.
Hey, Jim! Boo!
Excuse me.
That's a bad outfit!
Everyone seems pretty happy about the wedding, except for Tawny Young and some random racist guy that we'll never see again. The Green Lanterns do their best to avoid the media, who just a few issues ago were calling them all alien freaks, and then head into space, where they all say their final goodbyes. As John and Katma head off on their honeymoon, Chip and Salak head to Africa to check up on Ubix, Kilowog gets all emo and says he's going to Nicaragua, and Hal and Aresia opt for some alone time in Hawaii. Meanwhile, on Zamoran, we learn that it was Star Sapphire who took Hector Hammond from the island way back in issue 202, and the villains form an alliance, swearing to destroy that meddling Hal Jordan. Back in Hawaii, Hal and Aresia are getting ready for some happy fun naked time when Aresia starts going on about how Hal reminds her of her dad. Surprisingly, and for what is perhaps the first time ever, this jolts Hal out of his naturally horny state, and Hal says he just wants to go to sleep. Annoyed, Aresia goes for a walk alone, but is confronted by Sapphire and Hammond and quickly knocked unconscious. The next morning, Hal wakes up to find Aresia staring at him. Despite the utter creepiness of this, Hal thinks nothing of it, and the two embrace. Elsewhere, Sapphire and Hammond watch and revel in the fact that they've taken control of Aresia's mind. We then get a bit of recap about how Hammond used to have a thing for Carol, and let's be honest, clearly still does. And as Hal and Aresia continue to kiss, Aresia raises her ring and prepares to fire. Hal's ring instinctively blocks the attack, and Aresia explains the energy as basically a form of puberty. She says there's a mineral on Graxos 4, which is her home planet, that can stop it, and that they need to get there immediately. Hal wants to call his battery to charge his ring, but Aresia says she's already called hers, so they use it and head out into space. We then cut to a really, really awkward scene with Sapphire and Hammond before catching up again with Hal and Aresia. With a burst of speed, Aresia outpaces Hal. He tries to catch up, but finds his ring is fading. He tries to recharge, but finds Aresia's battery is only an illusion. He thinks he can rely on his reserve power, but finds it gone as well. With oxygen in short supply, and with Aresia's name as the last thing on his lips, Hal explodes. And that, Sapphire says, watching from afar, is how you kill Hal Jordan. To be continued?
He blowed up real good.
Mm-hmm. He went pop.
Hey, Jim, that is a bad outfit.
So who's first on this one? Jeffrey?
I went first last time.
David?
I went first the first time around. Oh, no, Charlie went first. It is my time.
It's your time, dude.
More so than the last issue, this is one of the most boring covers we've had. It's very basic, and I'm just like, oh, okay, that happened.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's badly rendered or anything, just it's there.
It's kind of like a color form set where you have a stock background, and then you just stick the figure of Hal Jordan on there.
Yeah. And this Hal Jordan is choking. This Hal Jordan is exploded. Page one. Wow, that wedding escalated quickly. I wish my wedding pictures had like a alien Green Lantern standing next to my mom.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great.
I have a wedding photo with the Loch Ness monster in the background because we got married on the banks of Loch Ness. So we had the photographer Photoshop in the Loch Ness monster.
So now I know I need to Photoshop in Salak into my wedding pictures.
Yeah, of course you should. I'm there.
Page two. Randy Baggins. His name is Randy Baggins. He is the fourth cousin, twice removed, of Bilbo Baggins. Now, as far as the wedding, how is that pulled off from a legal standpoint, or am I once again overthinking it?
I think you're overthinking it, but I thought about that too, because technically Katma's not even a resident of Earth, so...
Mm-mm. She doesn't even have a work visa, but...
That blood test didn't go well.
I want to see on page three the deleted scene where Tawny tried to go to the wedding and got punched in the face. That joke's never going to go away, just so
no,
you know.
No, it's not.
By the way, page 7, Star Sapphire's new outfit, that is the most horrid thing I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Oh, it's not just me. Good. Because I'm wondering when Dr. Polaris started designing women's apparel.
It's only just half there, too, because like one half is pretty armored and the other half is just not.
And then later on, none of it's there, but...
Yeah, I got a note about that, too.
Yeah, because I do my notes as I'm reading the issue. Page 8, my note is, I wish I'd started a drinking game at the beginning of the issue. For every editor's note, take a shot. And then page 9,
can
my note is...
Can we go back to Star Sapphire's costume for a minute?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't there a Marvel character that looks about like this? Not in pink, but maybe a Thor character?
Lady Sif. Lady Sif wore a costume kind of like this. Hers was a little bit more well-rounded. Hmm. It's a bad combination.
Yeah.
She's got
now
spikes
I watch
on
the
her
Thor
belt.
Movie again.
What's that?
Which one? Jeffrey wants to watch the Thor movie again. I've noticed that there's spikes on the belt.
That's what I was wondering, if Jeffrey wanted to watch the Thor movie. Okay.
I'm just going to go, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, see ya.
I got to get my Chris Hemsworth fix on. Page 9, my note was simply shot. And page 11, isn't that just like a man to roll over and go to sleep? Oh, and shot.
Uh-huh.
And then page 12. Well, that was anticlimactic. You've got that intense moment, and suddenly it's just like, we're kind of done with this.
Well, this is where the commercial break would be in a television show.
True. Okay, I can see that. Now, this is sort of an overall observation as I'm looking at this. Did the pencils and everything seem a little bit more crisp this issue?
I didn't really notice.
Or maybe the colors. It just, everything seems a little bit more vibrant than the previous issue.
It doesn't in my version, but my version is a muddy digital copy, so.
Okay. Moving on. Okay, explain this to me, because Aresia ages herself, and yet there are gaps in her mind where memories should be. But memories are only generated as you have empirical experience. Now, of course, her race may be different, but I'm not quite following that logic.
Because she aged herself 10 years, so she's got 10 years of aging where there are no memories.
But would the brain physically change with age? Because I thought
if her body changes, her mind could change too. The only thing that's strange for me is that if this is something that her race just does, that aging 10 years is a natural process, and therefore it shouldn't really affect the brain in quite that way, where there should be memories or something.
Mm. Okay, so it is a little bit off, but
it's
not
a leap.
Necessarily. Okay.
Yeah, you can buy into it or not buy into it. I'm not going to buy into it because I just can't.
Okay, thank you.
You're overthinking it again, Dave.
Sorry.
It's the curse of doing a podcast.
Yes, I know.
You overthink
it. You
everything.
Have to overthink it, yeah.
Page 16, I guess her race has a form of energy and is just escaping unpredictability. Dang it. I guess her race has a form of energy escaping unpredictably at puberty. I never shot Green Lantern energy when I was going through puberty. At most, my voice just cracked.
But you're not from Graxos.
True. I'm grateful for that. Because I thought puberty on Earth was bad.
Yeah. And you got to do it slowly. She did it all in like 5 panels or something.
It's fairly impressive. So we get to the scene on page 18 in which Star Sapphire decides to disrobe and show Hector Hammond what he's missing. I double-checked the cover for the comics code seal. How did that get past that?
Well, you don't see anything.
Well, it's
because Hal and Aresia are doing it in the sand?
Well, there is that going on. No, it's just an awkward scene because she just suddenly out of nowhere decides, I'm going to
wondering what the point was.
Point was just to show that, hey, look, Carol at Star Sapphire is really evil.
And doesn't mind getting all kinds of naked.
Yeah. But it was awkward and gratuitous. And...
Yeah.
And she has enough hair to cover up the naughty bits.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not opposed to a naked woman. I am flesh and blood after all, but this was just... If a woman did this, it would not be something that would be attractive. It would be more of a... That's awkward. Put your clothes back on and... take your meds.
You notice they don't show Hammond below the neck after a little bit of it.
Yeah, there is that.
Well, the only part of his body that works is his brain.
And that's really sweating.
I left notes off on that one. And then we get to page 22 with the with Hal exploding. I just think that's going to leave a mess.
A little bit.
Hey, I want some tang. Okay. But who is next up?
I'll go next.
Okay.
I haven't gone second yet, so I'm just throwing it out there. Page one, we have Dan Mather as the newscaster of CBS News as opposed to Dan Rather. I'm not sure why they had to change the name. CBS does – I mean Warner Brothers does own CBS as far as I know.
I wondered if they didn't get some flack from all the celebrity cameos in the Baron Tierno issue.
Mm.
Because last issue there was a Lonnie Chung instead of Connie Chung.
That's true. Okay.
That was in Justice League.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. Still, though.
Yeah. I actually had a note about the same thing because I thought – I read this as Rather just because I think Dan Rather actually was in a Adventures of Superman issue too. So.
Yes.
Right around the same time. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I think it was an issue 425, I want to say. I'm not positive.
Yeah, that would have been a hell for issue. Maybe they got slack from that too. So,
well, also, Kilowog has a box of Uncle Andy's reverted brand rice, which is, of course, I mean, it's playing off of the Uncle Ben's rice, but it's Uncle Andy is in Andy Helfer, and there is a little drawing of Andy Helfer's face in the corner. But they are throwing rice, which means birds are going to die painfully.
This is before they outlawed it. It's old school.
Well, yeah. It's one of those things. For anybody out there listening who does not know, the reason why you don't throw rice at a wedding the way that they always used to is that birds come and they eat all the rice because, you know, it's good and it's nutritious. The things that once it hits their stomachs, it starts to expand. They've already eaten a lot of it so that they're full. And they basically explode painfully from the inside. And it's not fun.
And it's a very beautiful sight.
I told my family I don't want them to throw rice. I want them outside the church with confetti cannons.
And did they do so?
I'm not married yet. When I get married.
How did I not know that?
What about a t-shirt cannon? We're throwing it out there.
I went to Michael's wedding and all I got was his crappy t-shirt.
I went to Michael's wedding and all I got was shot. Now, having the wedding on Super Bowl Sunday to minimize publicity is actually a pretty great idea. I dig that.
Yes, especially if you aren't a big fan of the Super Bowl.
Well, there is that too. I'm not a fan of football at all. I did see the Super Bowl last time, or at least most of it. I ended up cooking burgers halfway through. It's nice to see John's mom liking
Captain. Wait, Super Bowl, that's the thing they have in between all the commercials, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's some sort of a basketball game. It's nice to see that John's mom really does like Kat Matui. It's kind of rare, especially when you will not be getting grandkids out of this deal. But she really does like her, and that's not something that I would necessarily have expected. And, of course, she is played by Tyler Perry.
Nice.
Yeah. Page three, awesome. Tawny needs to get over it. Just get over it. You screwed up. It's your fault. He don't like you no more. And you're going to end up on Jerry Springer, which these rednecks will watch.
Yes.
Yes. Although I don't think Jerry Springer had gotten big yet or even started yet. But
that's not quite.
Beside the point, but the redneck racists are pretty hilarious. Page four, not telling where you're going for your honeymoon is totally going to backfire. I guarantee it. And I still don't care for pickleheads alternate oath. I would rather that they all say the oath together than him saying his own thing, because he's just special like that.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Page 5, so much for being alone if Replicon's going to be around the whole time. Like, hey guys, I've been by myself this whole time. Thanks for coming to visit. You going to hang out with me? No, we're going to go over there and have sex.
I'm going to awkwardly watch. Okay.
Hide your kids.
Hide your Replicons.
Well, Replicon's a shapeshifter. If Replicon's a shapeshifter, they could turn it into a three-way. Page 6.
Which is why they don't show that any more of the scene after that.
Yeah, that's part of it. Page 6, I somehow doubt that Hal and Aresia mind being left alone. Kilowog's like, sorry guys, it's not just the three of us. I'm going to go to Nicaragua, so you guys are on your own. They're like, darn, we're going to be by ourselves. That's too bad. And I am intrigued about whatever this secret is that Kilowog says that he has. I'm sure that we'll get to that in the next episode that we do. Or at least hopefully by then, but we'll see. Pages 7 through 9, Star Sapphire and Hector Hammond. It's three full pages that's almost all recapping plots and explaining their powers. It's a really long scene for just that. And I do also have to say, though, that these kinds of pages are hard to write. At least in my experience. Because it's all filler for the most part. They could have done this in one page, maybe two, just to give them a little bit of panel time. But three pages was a bit much. I was surprised when it went on to the third page. Page 10, I miss these kinds of references to the really old stories, like Aresia's predecessor in Green Lantern number 93. I miss that they don't do that anymore. Page 12, Aresia hasn't done... Yeah?
Continuity?
Yeah. There is no continuity anymore. Mm-hmm. That's a joke that I used to be able to make. Like a good three, 4 or 5 years ago, somebody was like, oh yeah, well, Marvel's better than DC. And I could say, oh yeah, well, at least DC has a sense of continuity. But they don't anymore. Well.
Well.
So Tim Drake was Robin? Oh, wait.
Yeah. Let's see, where was I? Page 12. Aresia has not done anything with her secret identity at all. I'm not even sure why Englehart decided to do that when he did, because nothing has been done with it.
Well, she says in one of these issues that she decided not to because she had those developments. Is that in this scene where they're on the beach?
Yeah. I put up my own adoption of a secret identity because of the growing I did.
I just don't know why he did it if she wasn't going to end up using it at all.
Oh, I see.
Or maybe there was a plan to use it and it just didn't end up working out. I don't know. Page 14. Couldn't they have just done something to Hal while he's sleeping instead? If they can attack Aresia and get into her brain this way with her being awake, what could they do to Hal while he's asleep?
No, they covered that because remember the ring protects them.
So how did they get to Aresia?
Because she had the holes in her memory.
Oh.
Her recent maturation, or mature, whatever, gave her an adult consciousness, but whole sections of her brain that would be filled with memories of her young adult years are empty, leaving gaps for me to sink my hooks into. That's...
They did try to... It's ham-fisted, but they did cover the explanation. I just missed it because it wasn't a good one, I guess.
Well, yeah.
Page 18. Damn, she's stripping for Hector. Too bad his brain is the only part of his body that works. And page 22. Dude, Hal just popped. And that's all I got.
All right, well, I guess I'll go next then. If I can get back. Page 1, I like that they had CBS on there. Usually they seem to make up networks, so it's kind of cool to actually have CBS. And let's see. Page... ENN. What?
The ENN, the Expositional News Network.
Yeah. Exactly. Page 2, this guy with the hat, which I'm guessing is John's brother, is very stereotypical black guy. Woo! Yeah, no, exactly. You're the best thing to come out of Detroit since the 57 Cadillac. You got yourself a Fox. So, yeah.
That, with got yourself, that's all one word.
Yeah, got yourself. It's nice to see how far they've come in 10 years or something. The Tawny thing was interesting because she's not just mad at John, but she's and Katma. She's also mad at Dan for taking her story. And then, of course, you got. It's interesting to have the redneck guy talk about a black guy and a colored broad, because for so long they would have been the same thing. So, well, not guy and the broad, but the other part. Let's see. And then moving along. Give me a sec. This is the part of my notes that I lost when I turned off my computer. So, yeah, the costume is weird. Although I do like that. Let's see, like page 7. I do like how Hector Hammond's got that little arm thing to keep his head propped up, so as not to break his neck. That's kind of cool. And let's see. Oh, here we go. Page 10. Interesting look at the Green Lantern costume. I always thought it was an energy construct from his ring, but apparently it is green tights over a black shirt and the white gloves. So I'm guessing somehow he got that Robin-itis that George Perez gave Robin with his costume, because I've never thought of it that way before.
Ever since we started the show, they've been going back and forth on whether the costume is an energy construct or whether it's an actual piece of clothing.
They can't make up their minds. Now, see, I could understand maybe the gloves. That I'm not so upset about. But yeah. It's the idea of the black part being separate from the green. That just seems weird. Hmm.
In fact, if you look back last issue, when they go chase after... Hal is in his civvies, and then they switch to their costumes, and... Hal uses his ring to put his costume on.
Yeah.
So that was an energy construct. But here...
It's just clothes.
Unless he's taking off the energy construct, which is weird.
Yeah, I was just thinking, why not just, you know, if he really wants to be, like, no shirt on, why not just, you know, ring that part of the costume away so you're just wearing the top half or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. And, in fact, the issue before that, when they started off at the... everyone relaxing at the... What you call it? At their... Citadel, and then they had to fly off to go after Guy. They all had regular clothes on, and everyone changed to energy construct costumes.
Yeah.
It took Arissa a couple panels to get to hers, because she still had her shorts on when they flew away, but she had her regular costume on by the time they caught up to the missiles. But yeah. Nice little trick on page like 14 and beyond, where we actually get to see Arissa's eyes and she no longer has the pupils to kind of indicate that she's being mind controlled. So that's kind of interesting. Just a little tell, even though we kind of already knew. But yeah, again, the whole nudity thing just seems kind of pointless, other than giving, you know, pissing off Hector Hammond enough to, you know, want to kind of go against her later on. I don't know what the rest of the story is because I haven't read it before, but it would give a reason for them to suddenly fight against each other or something at the end, if anything. I like how Hal's ring's losing power. Hal can't charge his ring because the lantern battery was just a construct. And he goes, well, that leaves me in a pickle. And it's like, you think? But, yep. And then he blows up at the end, and I'm wondering, I just can't wait to see how they pull, you know, how they bring him back now. I've got to find the next issue and read it, because we literally see him pop in space. So I can't imagine how they can bring him back from that. But obviously they do, because...
They clone him.
Spoiler. Yeah. But, yeah, other than that, I thought it was a pretty cool issue, other than the nudity issue, but yeah, and that's all I've got.
It was all good except for the naked stuff. You guys hit a lot of my notes, just a few minor things. Page 2, I actually googled that Bilbo Baggins' third cousin here, he says he works for WJBK. There actually was a CBS affiliate with those call letters at the time, and it was based out of Detroit. So I thought that was an interesting...
Oh, wow.
It's actually a Fox affiliate, or it became a Fox affiliate in the 90s, but either way, I found that interesting. Page 5, I thought that was a nice callback to the Replicon story with John and Katma honeymooning there. It wasn't a great story, but that was the issue where their romance first started to blossom, so things kind of come full circle with him going back there.
It was a little bit silly, but I look back on it kind of fondly. it's weird.
It's a
like
little
that.
Wistful.
Yeah.
Pages 10 through 10 and 11, very awkward conversation between Hal and Aresia, even if from Aresia's point of view it wasn't meant to come off like it did to Hal. I kind of get the impression that Hal was never as sure of this relationship as Aresia was, or at the very least he never took it as seriously as she did. It kind of feels like for Hal, it's just a thing where Aresia really sees it as going someplace. I mean, Hal kind of still treats her as maybe not a little sister, but, you know, a younger friend, and you know it's not going to end well. But Aresia does really look cute on these pages, I thought, especially in that panel with the panel 2, page 11, panel 2, with the big eyes. Very cute.
She's also not drooling, so that's a plus.
That's a very big plus, yes. Page 22, Hal just exploded. Well, Charlie, glad you could come on for this final episode.
Yeah.
I mean, with Hal dead, there's clearly no more issues to cover, so.
Woohoo! Glad I could be here for such a momentous occasion.
Yeah. But despite my complaints, I thought it was a decent issue. Englehart is, you know, for the most part, doing these three-issue arcs, and the first issue always seems to be the weakest because it's mostly set up. But there's lots of promises here, and I like the pairing of Sapphire and Hammond, even though it's not quite living up to its potential yet. But we'll see where it goes next episode.
I have a question before we move on. How have they shown Aresia trying to do the Cindy... whatever her name is, secret identity? Because how does she hide the ears and the orange skin?
No, they brought up that she was going to adopt the identity, and then this is the first time we've heard of it since.
Oh, okay.
But they went through the whole thing with, you know, all you Green Lanterns are alien freaks, and we don't want you here, and blah, blah, blah.
Interesting.
With Tawny Young leading that charge.
And no idea how she's supposed to be able to hide the orange skin. That's weird.
No. Although a Green Lantern ring can morph their appearance.
Oh, really?
We've seen them do that. But I think in that same issue, they mentioned that Salak and Kilowog couldn't adopt secret identities because they didn't look human. So who knows?
Aresia kind of looks human enough. And, I mean, even with the slightly orange skin, I mean, there are people who have slightly orange skin like that.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not even going to be talking about the Speaker of the House or anything like that. But it could definitely still work. The main thing for me is that she'd have to hide her ears. And if she's showing off enough boobage, people aren't going to really care anyway.
This is true. I would think that really with her, the ears would be the big problem. Wearing hats.
She would always have to wear a hat or a headband. She could do like Spock in Star Trek IV.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's the 80s, so that would work. For now.
Yeah, for now.
All right. Well, that takes us to the next issue, but we're actually going to take a break, I think. We want to take a break?
We'll take a break.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a break, play another promo, and then we'll come back to talk about Justice League number 1.
Da-da-da-da.
Ready to form Voltron!
This is a job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And next up is Justice League number one, which had a cover date of May 1987 and a release date of February 5th, 1987. And I don't know about the other issues, but this issue has been reprinted a lot.
The Green Lantern issues we talked about have not been reprinted.
Oh, okay. So
yet.
Yeah, exactly. They're pretty soon, I'm sure it'll be available on the Comixology or something.
Yeah, they'll put it back out when they do the sequel to Green Lantern.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
Never going to happen, my friend.
But just as a note of where this has been reprinted before we get into the story, and I'm sure there's more than this, but these are the ones I found. There's Justice League, A New Beginning trade paperback from 1989. There's the Millennium Edition version of Justice League number one from 2000, which also had a variant version, because something that cool, you have to have a variant version. There's JLA, The Greatest Stories Ever Told, trade paperback from 1986. There's Justice League International Volume 1 hardcover from 08. And then the trade paperback version of that same book from 2009. And those are just ones I found. The title of the story is Born Again, which had a plot and breakdown by Keith Giffen, script by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, penciled by Kevin McGuire, inked by Terry Austin, lettered by Bob Lapin, colored by Gene D'Angelo, and edited by Andrew Helfer. So a couple of people actually carry over from Green Lantern. We begin our tale in the meeting room at the Justice League headquarters, where Guy Gardner is sitting in a chair and thinking about how he's going to let everyone know that he's going to be the new leader. First to join him via teleporter tube is Black Canary, who suddenly has long hair, in her Ultra 80s costume. After remarking about how the old headquarters never seems to change outside of being more up to date now, which technically is a change, Guy shows off his sensitivity and angers Canary. Next, they are joined by Mr. Miracle and Oberon, and we learn that Miracle has doubts about joining the League, but Oberon is more excited about how this will be a boost for Miracle's public image. Oberon then tries to introduce himself to Guy, who promptly refers to him as one of the Seven Dwarfs, and kind of ignores him. Next up is Captain Marvel, who decided to fly. Yeah. You're welcome. Who decided to fly in rather than teleport, and is surprised by all of the media coverage taking place outside of the headquarters. This sounds great to Blue Beetle, who is next into the room alongside Martian Manhunter, but Manhunter is not amused by the media coverage and is still upset by the way the old League ended. He then goes to a computer, pulls up the files on Steel, Gypsy, Vixen, and Vibe.
Laughs and goes away. Oh, sorry.
Nice. Purges their files from the system and then mopes. The others are about to console him, but Guy picks that moment to call the meeting to order with a construct hammer. In Washington, D.C., Maxwell Lord IV enters his office at Innovative Concepts in a very happy mood. While he watches news coverage about the formation of the new league, Lord decides that instead of being the Justice League of America, perhaps it would be better if they were just the Justice League. Back at League headquarters, Guy and Canary are in the midst of an argument and his supposed leadership role. She wants him to abide by the rules and traditions of the League, and he, frankly, doesn't give a damn. Oberon tries to put in his two cents, but Guy literally sweeps him away with the broom construct.
After a guy makes a rather lewd comment about him and women, Martian Manhunter steps in, only to be plucked off the ground by a crane construct. The machine, not the bird. Guy attempts to reason that he's just better equipped to be the leader than anyone else, but when Captain Marvel tries to reason with him, Guy counteracts by being a smartass. Oberon tries to tackle Guy from the head, but Guy just throws the little fellow right at Mr. Miracle. Out in the hallway, Batman and Dr. Fate have arrived, each surprised that the other is there. They enter the meeting room to see a Guy versus the League brawl going on. Fate prepares to use his magic to bring an end to the fight, but Batman has other ideas. He walks through the crowd of heroes and right up to Guy and tells him to sit down. This angers Guy at first, but he thinks better of it and takes his seat at the table. Later, Batman takes pretty much leadership of the team and reads the League charter. And believes that it's best for the team to maintain a low profile for now until they learn more about themselves and each other. Meanwhile, at the UN building in New York, Dr. Kimio Hoshi, a.k.a. the heroic female Dr. Light, is in the ladies' room trying to get her Justice League signal device to stop beeping because she is to address the General Assembly in about 5 minutes.
The heroic female Dr. Light opposed to the rapey male Dr. Light.
Exactly.
Hi, you threw in the word in the episode. Yay!
Yay! We got rapey. Ha! Now I have to take a drink. Okay, failing to do this, she puts the device in her purse and hopes it will muffle the noise while flashing back to earlier when a mysterious man gave her the device and invited her to join the new Justice League as Dr. Light. She ends the flashback glad that the device has finally stopped beeping when she actually stumbles across a small group of terrorists who immediately take her hostage. They lead her into the General Assembly Hall where their leader threatens the UN into listening to what he has to say. Thinking quickly, Dr. Hoshi activates her signal device, which is picked up at League HQ. Guy is ready to head out and bust heads, but Batman stops him, preferring his methods. He sends Dr. Fate and Captain Marvel to fly ahead to scope out the situation, while the rest of the team head out in Blue Beetle's bug. Guy tries to go with Fate and Marvel, but Batman stops him, and, believe it or not, Guy listens. But he's not happy about it. So while Guy while Guy sits in the corner and pouts, literally, the team catches the new report. Oh, wait a minute. The team catches a new TV report about the terrorist and see the leader, who has a bomb grafted to his chest that is set to explode if his heart stops. Upon arriving at the UN, Marvel tells them that Fate just disappeared, and we don't see him again for the rest of this issue. Guy uses this as an opportunity to give Batman crap about his leadership abilities and is ready to head inside, but instead, Batman has him use his ring to seal off the building. Inside, while Dr. Hoshi feels helpless, the rest of the League take down the terrorist guards in the hall, with Blue Beetle using his bug's communication system to check in and take care of the radio contact so as not to raise an alarm. Inside the General Assembly, Martian Manhunter sneaks in invisibly and tells Dr. Hoshi of the League's plan. Outside, Guy gets his signal and heads inside as Batman swoops down to surprise the terrorist leader, and Dr. Hoshi uses her power to create a large flash of light to blind everyone in the hall. When Guy busts in, he uses brick constructs to knock out the terrorists, and the leader makes threats to blow everyone up. So Batman has the team clear out of the assembly hall. Guy wants to rip the guy's lungs out, but again, Batman stops him. As the last of the people leave, we see We see the leader pick up a gun. Back in Maxwell Lord's office, he watches news coverage at the end of the terrorist siege. We see the League depart, the police gathering up the terrorists, the leader, now identified as John Charles Collins, dead due to a gunshot wound to the head, apparently. And Lord seems to be a bit surprised that Collins shot himself and that his bomb failed to detonate. Then again, maybe that was because Lord didn't give him the firing pin. And that's the end of the very first adventure of the new Justice League.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
Who hasn't gone? Jeffrey, have you gone first?
I went first already.
David?
I went first, but I don't mind going first again. I've got fairly short notes, brief notes.
Okay.
That I just shut down. That's not what I wanted.
You have the floor, sir.
I like to start with the cover because this is going to become a reused iconic pose for our, most of the 80s and 90s. They're going to come back to this sort of group shot, sort of claustrophobic, leaned in, glaring at you. And of course, Guy gets the last word. Want to make something of it?
Well, he's the leader.
Well, yeah. He is, yeah. So but that's the thing, center. I love that he Guy's already walking in deciding he's going to take the lead after we just saw him try to take the lead of the core and failing.
Well, I could see, like, as a caption contest or something, just, you know, everybody gets a line. I think Batman's line is just a simple grrr.
Actually, it looks like it's
and Mr. Miracle is like, I'm feeling a little claustrophobic here.
Yeah,
he does look a little squished, doesn't he?
And Oberon's saying, "Who farted?"
And Hoshi's saying, "It's me."
Speaking of people on the cover, I'm jumping to page 2. I really hate this costume for Black Canary. I've always hated it.
Here. I had a similar note, yes.
it's pretty universally panned, so.
I think most of us had that note.
Yeah.
It's like someone took every 80s fashion cliche and just wrapped them all up in one big costume.
Yeah.
You got she the looks a little, sleeves, she's, the big yep. boots, yeah, big hair, shoulder pads.
The headband.
Mm-hmm. Now, didn't she have short hair in Legends?
Maybe, he said, stalling for time as he pulled the issue back out.
That's a good question.
I don't know.
She did.
Okay, so she grew it out.
She got extensions.
Yeah, Linda Hamilton style.
Yeah.
It's true, it is.
Yep, storm's coming.
Weird.
And you know what's funny is Guy actually probably does halfway believe that Sly Stone models himself after him.
Probably.
Yeah. And of course, page 3, yay, Captain Marvel. I remember being really happy to see him on the lineup when I was a kid. And I know I don't think it's a spoiler to say that his tenure with the league is fairly short, but it has some awesome moments, so.
Yeah. He gets to be front and center in that cool alternate cover with the Superman logo on it. Oh, good. No one knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's fighting Rocket Red, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jeffrey, what they did, I don't know why they did it, but for some reason, one of the issues, they replaced the DC Bullet with a Superman-type logo. I don't remember if it was because of the 50th anniversary or what.
No, they were testing out a new logo.
Okay, they were just testing out a new logo in the corner. And they only did it that one time, and they only did it for a short run of issues, so it's a very rare version and stuff like that.
I think it was only 2 issues, wasn't it?
That I don't know. I only know of the one. I've only thought I heard of the one. I'm not sure.
I'll look into it before we get there, but yeah, that's, you're right. It was a very small print run.
I never knew that. But let's be honest, my memory's not what it could be, because one of the biggest things I remember about this era of the league with the tile floors.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That design, you know, it's so down to earth, but at the same time, the more you read into this, especially with this creative team, it starts to get a little obnoxious.
And I'm sure D'Angelo hated it.
Yeah.
Especially
drawing these floors again.
when you can't use a computer and you got to cut the film and stuff. Oh.
Yeah.
I am so glad for Photoshop.
Thank you, Photoshop. I was kind of floored by the Detroit League reference. I had forgotten that they even had any references to it in this book. It gets a lot of, I wouldn't say hate, I think it gets a lot of ridicule unnecessarily. The Detroit League was actually a fairly good read. I mean, yeah, we had Vibe. Yeah, we had Gypsy. But we had Steel as well.
And Vibe.
I mentioned Vibe.
And Vixen.
It wasn't as bad as everybody says. I wouldn't. I mean, look at the lineup we have here. They're not A-listers, with the exception of Batman.
Right.
And it's the same idea. It was just with this, I think it was crafted a little bit better.
So you're saying Vibe is on par with Captain Marvel?
Not what I'm saying at all. Captain Marvel, at this point, as you mentioned, he had been Earth S up until Crisis.
Yes,
so
yeah.
Captain Marvel's still dipping his feet into the DCU as a whole.
Right. And it takes him a while before he actually
gets
to be a part of it. Yeah.
Anyway, have they put? They haven't started the new miniseries, have they? It's Shazam: New Beginning.
Oh no! It would have been coming out pretty much around this time.
Okay.
Because it directly followed Legends, as far as publishing, but preceded Legends in terms of story chronology. So.
Of course.
And then all of that would be wiped out by Zero Hour.
Yeah.
But that's 7 years away.
Yeah.
And it's okay because you still got Jerry Ordway's version, and that was pretty cool too.
Shazam. This isn't a Shazam podcast, yet there should be one out there.
Yeah, just to answer your question, the first issue of Shazam: A New Beginning came out on January 15th, according to Mike's, and the final issue of Legends was January 29th. So they started
overlapped. Okay.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, and this would have been February, so it would have been like set right about the second issue, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Weird. I mean, I read it luckily in chronological order, but imagine trying to get those issues on the stands and trying to just put the pieces together.
Uh huh.
That's very new 52 of them. Anyway, page 6.
You've really got to just buy them, read them, and then put them in order. That's how I did it.
Well, yeah, but you did it after the fact, though.
Yeah, but for instance, when I was reading them in the 90s, I was reading a whole lot of DC comics, and a lot of them really would take place at certain specific times, and I would read them and figure out what the chronology should be and put them in order.
True. I mean, that's the way we did it back in the day. Now the kids have the internets.
Exactly.
It's a whole other topic. On page 6 of the Justice League book, who would have ever thought that Max Lord would become a manipulative villain down the road?
I didn't see that coming.
Martian Manhunter being a part of the team is fitting, as Grant Morrison pointed out that he's been pretty much a part of every incarnation of the Justice League from the beginning. So as Grant Morrison described him, he's the elder statesman. So the New 52 version of Justice League is probably the only version not to include Martian Manhunter, but it looks like they're going to correct that somewhat. Page 11, two words, sit down. Two more words, one punch. You'll see.
That's coming.
So when you read that panel, did you read it in Kevin Conroy's voice or Michael Keaton's voice?
Always Kevin Conroy.
He read it as Adam West.
Swear to me.
Sit down, old chum.
I want to hear Adam West say that.
Sit down,
old chum.
Page 21. How is this embarrassing for Blue Beetle? He's new on the scene for all intents and purposes. I mean, he's still a rookie hero.
Yeah.
And he's doing recon. Somebody has to do that work. Page 23, to kind of wrap up, Martian Manhunter tells Dr. Light that he admires her efficiency. I think he's checking her out. Because of that stall, you know, it's like, I admire your efficiency. Like, she just caught him staring at her butt.
Both of them. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. My only complaint about the issue, my only legitimate complaint, no Starro.
Yeah, that's too bad. I like Starro.
Then Snapper Carr can defeat him with Lime. No joke. But that is my sparse notes. Who is next up?
Michael. All
right. I have read a few issues here and there of this era of the League, but I've never read completely through this era. I'm not a huge fan of Keith Giffen, typically. And this bwahaha brand of humor isn't something that's typically my cup of tea either. So I've never read through it. But it's obviously much loved, and it's been on my someday list, but I'm really looking forward to reading through it and seeing what, you know, other people see in it. And if this first issue is any indication, I think I'm going to like it more than I thought I would.
You're saying exactly my sentiments as well, so I completely agree with you, and I'll skip over that part in my notes.
Wow. Page 1, I realize that because we are a Green Lantern podcast, I could be biased, but I'm happy to see Guy such a big part of this opening issue. Other than Dr. Light, who doesn't even appear in costume, he's the newest character here, so seeing him get played up so prominently was kind of awesome, especially since he's really not all that likable of a character at this point. Jumping way ahead to page 11, I know enough about this era and these creators to know that this is the kind of thing we're going to get a lot of in these issues. Basically letting Maguire's artwork and characters who are expressive without being cartoony tell the story. Giffen really likes his dialogue, which is one of the things that has kind of turned me off of his work. But thankfully, with Maguire, we get scenes like this where the expressions on the characters' faces basically tell the story. And even though there are parts of Maguire's art that kind of, or at least this era of artwork that kind of are off-putting to me, I do appreciate that aspect of it. Page 12, I can't see the grumpy, brooding Batman of today reading the JLA charter. Kind of ruins the mystique when you're standing in front of a brightly lit room droning on for an hour like Ben Stein. Page 25, my note is, wow, so Max Lord was an underhanded jerk from the beginning, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all the notes I had, but overall I enjoyed this. It was a very promising beginning, and it's hard to say based on just this issue alone, but you know, I think I might end up enjoying this era more than I thought, and I'm definitely looking forward to more issues and seeing how this era of the League developed, since it is so beloved by so many people. Jeffrey?
Okay, I can see that Guy's a big fan of How to Win Friends and Influence People in this story.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'm not a huge fan of Guy because he gets so gratingly annoying, and he does this a lot, and that's kind of my issue with Guy. There are times when he, you know, really pulls through. There are times when he can be endearing, but it's not usual, and we certainly don't see it here.
And I think to this point in the books we've covered on the show, we've only seen that irritating jerk side. We haven't seen the endearing side of him yet.
Right. We have seen him like win and be right before.
Right.
But that's about it. For as soon as I took a look at page one, I realized, okay, I have read this before. I know that I have this issue, so I've read this before. But I'm glad to see this bit carrying over from Green Lantern. I think it was number 211 when he was leaving the Green Lantern Corps, as it was. Page two, never cared for this Black Canary costume, but we've already covered that. And Guy is calling Oberon one of the seven dwarves on page three. So, yeah, once again.
I like that.
Max Lord's secretary. Her name is Miss Wootenhofer. That's pretty awesome. I like that name. Page seven, there's Ronald Reagan again. I told you guys that he shows up a fair amount of the time. And this is kind of interesting. If there were superheroes in real life, this is also on page seven. Are there religious nuts who would honestly think that they're not real because there's no biblical explanation?
Huh.
That it's all done with wires and tricks? I don't know. Page eight, Guy Gardner.
There are people who don't believe we've landed on the moon.
Well, yeah, but they're not really people. I've got a whole story about that, but I think I've already talked about that, or I'll save it for another time. Page eight, Guy Gardner actually assaults Oberon with that brushing thing. That is assault. No wonder Oberon like goes and grabs his head on the next page. And yeah, Guy, there's one thing when he's a jerk. There's another one when he's actually like, you know, hitting people or knocking them over because he disagrees with them. That to me is just going too far, even in terms of a comic book. Page 10, when Batman shows up, you know he's going to put a stop to this. And on page 11, yep.
No.
It is pretty freaky. Yeah. It is pretty freaky about the terrorist just having to shoot himself. And on the last page, it turns out that Max Lord is a bad, bad man. But really good story on this first issue, and it sets things up nicely. I could do without some of the stuff with Guy, but oh well. And I am looking forward to reading through the series. It'll turn into Justice League International for issue 7. And then we will get a Justice League America. So we'll be kind of going back and forth just a little bit. I think I might just go ahead and, while we're reading these, go ahead and read the International and America. And when Europe comes out, I'll read that too, just so I can get the full flavor of everything that was going on with this sort of ongoing story, which is several teams. But right now it's just the one. And this is where we start off.
Charlie?
Okay, my notes. I do like, starting on page one, how Guy just assumes he's going to be the leader and is actually practicing what he's going to say in his head anyway. Even the any objections? Didn't think so. Page two, those first three panels, looking at it now, it's kind of probably because of the way he's holding his head, but Guy's face kind of makes changes quite a bit in those first three panels. Not so much because of the light, I don't think, especially the first and second, but I think it's just the way he's holding his head. So I guess it's actually kind of realistic. Also, McGuire draws a pretty nice looking Black Canary outside of the costume. So, well, despite the costume, let's put it that way.
That's a better way to phrase that.
Yeah, so let me just move right along then. I like Oberon's giant sideburnt mutton chops. Those are pretty cool. I would never do that, especially if I didn't have that much hair on the top of my head, but yeah. And I like how he's trying to be nice, and Guy's just being Guy, and it just ticks him off. Mumble, mutter, gripe. So, yeah. It's cool to see Captain Marvel get some time in the JLA, or sorry, the Justice League. Yeah, it's not going to be that long, but, you know, whatever. And like I think David said, it's pretty interesting to see them reference the Detroit League, and then Martian Manhunter just purges their files. So it's sad. But then when you know now that they're going to come back for the new Justice League of America, that's kind of cool. Page six. So in addition to watching the news coverage of the Justice League, it appears that Maxwell Lord is also watching an episode of Star Trek and Looney Tunes. So that's kind of cool. Let's see. And like we mentioned last time, looks like we've got Lonnie Chung. And I had a note that it was like, it's kind of weird that they couldn't use Connie Chung, but they could use Dan Rather in the Green Lantern issue. But
it was Dan Mather.
Yeah, so that kind of killed my whole point.
Oh,
but
okay.
I think she was with CBS at the time too. So yeah, it definitely looks like her. Let's see. And I'm wondering if the guy in the first panel is supposed to be someone I just don't recognize, and they don't have a name to pretend with. Let's see. What else do we have? I like how a guy does the brush off and sweeps Oberon away, and that Oberon's wearing a suit, but he's got some Adidas sneakers on. Very... very 80s.
It's hard to find dress shoes in that size.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can find plenty of kid size Adidas. That, on the next page, page 9, the way that Oberon tries to tackle Guy, I would think would have really hurt Guy. Because he's getting pulled back, like, from the head. So I can see why he'd be upset. Although I do think it's kind of funny that he throws Oberon at Mr. Miracle. Again, the sit down, that's pretty awesome. And on the, was it the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th panels, the expressions on Guy Gardner's face are really cool. McGuire's always been good with the expressions, and it's just really cool to see him, because he starts off scared when Batman first says sit down, or surprised. Then he's like really ticked. And then he's kind of smug, and then he's like, maybe I better sit down. And then you see him sit down, and he's all hunched over, like, whatever. So that's cool. And then on the next page, everyone's bored listening to the charter. And Batman, even after getting through his whole speech, "I'd appreciate it if you would try to pay attention when I'm talking. If you find these meetings boring, then perhaps you shouldn't be here."
Yeah, it looks like Black Canary's just turned around reading a book or something.
Uh-huh. And looks like Martian Manhunter's flicking something on the table, and Mr. Miracle might be asleep, and Beetle is just kind of... It's pretty cool. I found it interesting, too, that Dr. Light couldn't get the signal device to turn off. But then when she needed to turn it on, it suddenly she was able to figure out how it worked and was able to turn it on without it making a whole bunch of noise for everyone else to hear. It's just kind of interesting. Speaking of the way Kevin Maguire draws women, all his women look pretty. I'll just leave it there. And then because I don't want to
– outside of their clothes.
Even the terrorist.
The terrorist woman actually looks kind of – pretty other than the messed up hair and stuff. It's interesting that everyone's kind of contradicting Batman's orders. He doesn't get that too much back in Gotham, and it's kind of interesting that he's getting frustrated by it this time. But I guess with this version of Batman, it's a little easier. If it was the scary Morrison Batman of the 90s, then yeah, I don't think anyone would be questioning his orders. They'd be like, right, no problem. But the only thing I want to call foul on the fact that they leave the room, Batman does too, and basically leaves this terrorist to kill himself. Excuse me. Batman, I'm sure, just Batman being who he is, must have known that there was that gun within reach of the terrorist. And the fact that he just walks off to let the guy kill himself is just it's a party foul.
I don't think the terrorist killed himself.
Well, he's picking up the gun, and then the next time we see him, he's dead. And it says, apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Yeah, I got that he killed himself.
Oh, I took it that Max Lord did it, or orchestrated it, at the very least.
Well, he orchestrated the whole thing, but he kept the firing pin so the bomb wouldn't have exploded even if the guy died. But... He killed himself probably to try to make good on his threat, and just exactly, and it didn't work.
Okay,
but it just seems really wrong that Batman would do that. Whether he thought it was going to explode or not, the fact that he just walked off with a gun within reach.
Yeah.
If anything, he should have taken him down, knocked him out, and then dealt with the bomb, knowing that it didn't have the firing pin.
Exactly. So you're saying he should have thrown a batarang at it?
Yes.
Yes.
Just making sure.
Have thrown a batarang at it. How'd you take him down?
Throw a batarang at it.
It was a big rock. But yeah, that's all I got. I thought it was a fun issue. A great balance of humor and also, the serious drama. I really liked the art. And like you guys said, the cover is going to be emulated over and over again, especially in this era of the Justice League. Every time they start a new team and every time there's a big change to the lineup, they do this cover. So, yeah. And when they brought them back later on, the first issue, I think, was of that Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League was pretty much this cover. So, yeah. But even, yeah,
Go ahead.
Okay. But yeah, I really liked it, and it's a great way to start off a series. There's not a huge cliffhanger to make you buy more. There's just enough subplots to get a mystery going to make you want to read more. And it was just a fun, exciting issue. I would have kicked Guy out, but other than that, yeah.
Maybe you said this before, but are you familiar with this era of the League?
Not a ton.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm definitely going to now. This is just – reading this for this has put this more on my reading list. I'm going to get through it really quick, I hope.
All right. Well, that's it for Justice League. There's no letters column in the book. That'll probably start around issue 3 or 4. That's usually how they go. But as for other books featuring members of the Green Lantern Corps. Hal made a cameo in Justice League of America number 261, which was the final issue of that original volume for the League. And then there was New Teen Titans numbers 29 through 31, which featured appearances by Jon Stewart and Kat Matui, and even a cameo by Tony Young in issue number 31, probably complaining about how John isn't paying enough attention to her and wants to marry that hussy Kat Matui. But that's it for this episode. John, or Charlie, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
Nice.
Why don't you tell the folks where they can find your podcasts and anything else you got going?
All right. Well, my first podcast I do is Superman in the Bronze Age, where I get to go through the Bronze Age at various points through the Bronze Age and talk about some of the Superman's adventures in there, from both his main books as well as some of the satellite titles, including the current at that time Justice League books. And then, of course, I'm also joined by the illustrious J. David Weider, who does Superboy in the Bronze Age. So make sure you check that out. That's at supermaninthebronzeage.com. And then I've also got Charlie's Geekcast, which is where I get to talk about pretty much whatever the heck I want. Anything from comics to movies to cartoons to TV shows and more. Basically, kind of sort of staying away from Superman, though, just because of the fact that I cover Superman on my other show. So that's going to be at Superman the Bronze Age / Charlie's Geekcast. And if everything has worked out by the time this episode comes up, it could also be at charliesgeekcast.com. So make sure you check that out, too, because that's by the time this one comes out, it's a very new podcast. So that's really all that. And you can find – oh, and I'm also doing some guest stuff going to help David and John Wilson cover the Hell on Earth storyline in the new 52 Adventures of Superman podcast, which is at – was it new52superman.libsyn.com?
That's correct.
Yep. And I think that's it. Yeah, that's all I do.
Cool.
And you see me in various places like Facebook and Twitter. And I'm on Google Plus. I never use it, but I'm on Google Plus. So yeah, check
no me. One uses Google Plus, so you're in good company.
Yeah, exactly. Except for Shag.
Well, thanks again for coming on. It was great having you here, and hopefully you can come back at some point.
I would love to. This was fun. Thanks.
Next episode, we'll be looking at issues 213, 214, and 215 of Green Lantern Corps, as well as issues 2, 3, and 4 of Justice League. And I think we've got an annual, another annual that we'll be covering next episode as well. So
I could swear we just did one.
Like last episode? Yeah.
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 But until then, this is Michael Bradley.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
That's awesome. I'm J. David Weider.
J. David Weider.
And I'm Dan Mather.
See you later. Thanks for listening to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, hosted by Michael Bradley,
Jeffrey Taylor,
and J. David Weider. Show notes, past episodes, and other information about the show can be found at greenlanternslight.com. You can also subscribe to the show directly via the RSS feed and on iTunes.
If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop us a line to greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com or use the contact form at the website. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and interact with us directly. Let us know your thoughts, and we might even read your message on a future episode.
Green Lantern and all related elements are copyright DC Comics. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you'll come back next month. But until then,
in brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape our sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware our power.
Green Lantern's light.
I'm here.
I'm still here. That's sort of kind of sad. Like, who's here? Is there anybody out there?
Hello?